In the summer of 1981, a puny, pimple-faced kid walked into an arcade at the local mall, his pocket full of quarters. His ears were inundated with more blips than Johnny Five and R2-D2 could combine to produce. His nostrils burnt from unfiltered tobacco and most certainly marijuana smoke. And his wide eyes reflected the figures of Pac-Man, Q-Bert, and Donkey Kong blasting off screens. The kid was me, and probably you, and I was seconds away from crapping my pants.
Grab your quarters, because you know what time it is. It's time for another edition of So Bad It's... You want to take us out of the break, or you want me to?
I would like you to.
Okay.
I volunteer you.
Okay. Well, welcome back, everyone. Actually, I guess we should give a welcome back to ourselves, John, because it's been a little while since we've hit up the podcast here on So Bad It's, the podcast of all things pop culture, awkward adolescence and fun stuff like that. So John, welcome back to you.
Thanks. I don't really understand what you mean, but okay.
We've been on sabbatical. We've been studying with the Sherpas in Nepal on how to craft and hone our podcasting skills. So now we're back, and judging by the first couple of minutes, we haven't learned much, but we're going to keep at it. This episode, we're tackling the weird, wondrous, and wild world of 80s arcades and all the glory video games and sights, sounds, and smells that are associated with them. John, I mean, this was an incredible time growing up, and I feel kind of privileged to have experienced it kind of when it happened. So I guess let's delve right into it. Your first memory of either playing an arcade video game or being in an arcade, what game was it? What were you thinking?
You know, I think my first recollection of video games just out and about in general was probably at a restaurant called Beefsteak Charlie's.
Oh yeah.
Where they had the all you can eat shrimp and salad bar, and God knows how many years of life that peel and eat shrimp is taken off.
Hell of a dessert bar too. My God.
Yes. There was some kind of a golf game there. Maybe one of the early versions. Oh, what the hell? There was, you know, a pretty popular one. It'll come to me in a minute, but there was a
Tiger
golf
Woods?
Game.
15? Tiger Woods 13?
Tiger Woods wasn't born
Tiger
yet,
Woods
was he?
Tiger Woods 82.
No. It was like 81, 79. And Beefsteak Charlie's, shrimp. There was I remember seeing Dig Dug there, and I don't know if that was the first game that I saw in an arcade setting. Some of these restaurants would have little tiny arcade areas. Your one other memory was definitely at a hotel, and then of course at the Smith Haven Mall, Time Out Arcade, down by Herman's. In case anybody
down by
was,
Herman's, you know, yeah, I think it was near McCrory's and the Orange Julius. Actually, no, the Orange Julius was more like in the middle of the atrium there. The Smith Haven Mall, for those of you that did not grow up on Long Island in Smithtown, then experienced the Smith Haven Mall. It was like a big plus sign, and everything kind of emanated out of the middle. So you had like each wing, you know, you had one wing was like the Sears wing, the other wing was like the Macy's wing, and then I don't remember what the other two wings were. There was a Herman's Sporting Goods. It was incredible. It was an incredible place. It was an incredible ecosystem going on there.
And not only that, I mean, it was enough to support. We had our own Monster I mean,
that's
if
true.
You know,
yeah, the mall monster.
Yeah,
that's a, well, that, I mean, that is that's an episode in and of itself, which we'll get into at some point.
Absolutely. But you know, we get off on a tangent a little bit here. Herman's was a sports store. You walk in, they had a little bit of a window display going. You know, you check in, check out some of that. Then next up was pretty much Time Out, right?
You're really challenging my memory of the Long Island Mall system right now.
Yeah, let's pretend that the next
for a long time.
Yeah, let's pretend that the next the next store there was Time Out. It may have been the reverse, but that's fine.
But I do want to say, and I didn't want to have to do this, but I'm going to do it because it's almost 2016, so it's tangent time. And you know, you talk mm-hmm. Beefsteak Charlie's, which was actually at the Smith Haven Mall.
What?
Yeah, it was right next to it or nearby.
Was it? Yeah.
And again, if you grew up on Long Island, I don't know where Beefsteak Charlie's was. I don't know if this was like a national thing. It may have just been a New York Long Island.
It had to be just New York.
But they had these really ridiculous commercials. Actually, they probably weren't even that ridiculous. But the Beefsteak Charlie character was like this old time, you know, like 1920s. It almost seemed like a barbershop looking mm-hmm. guy. He had like the handlebar mustache and whatnot. And I just remember going there and I was a really shy kid. So for me to go up to someone working there was a big deal in of itself, but I was obsessed with Beefsteak Charlie, the person. I thought it was a real person. I didn't understand that it was just a character selling, you know, the restaurant. And I remember going there one time and I pulled aside the maitre d'. I'm like, hey, where's Beefsteak Charlie? And he said something like, he's in the back. And normal inquisitive kids would have asked more questions. For me, it was just kind of like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And I just went to my table and ate dinner and left and went home. So,
are you sure you didn't ask for a Beefcake Charlie?
No.
Beefcake, because that was a different, all right. Well, either way. So that's like my first memory. And then, you know, I'll talk a little bit more as we go on about these little cutouts, if you will. I call them cutouts. They were little sections of a store that had two or three video games. They're pseudo video arcade, if you will. Because there were quite a few of those on Long Island. But, I mean, you get to the mall, you get to Time Out. That was pretty much the mainstay. But I will be honest with you, it was a little intimidating for me. Some of the stores, some of the restaurants had better lighting than Time Out. They had fewer people playing games, fewer lines, younger people. There's, you know, the average age of somebody commanding a machine back then was not nearly as young as people would think.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I was straight up scared shitless going into Time Out. It was super intimidating to me. I thought I was going to be murdered if I walked in too far into that place. It was kind of like mm-hmm. going to the ocean when I was a kid, where I just absolutely loved the ocean. I love body surfing, going into the waves. But I felt like if I got in over my head, a shark was going to come and eat me, which is also
Right.
Coincidentally enough, why I never wore a red bathing suit, because I figured red looked like blood and would attract the shark. So if I saw someone wearing a red bathing suit, I would swim the hell away from them, thinking, what this has to do with video games? Not much. But
nothing.
My point
except
being,
there have been a few shark games made.
There have been a few sharks.
Including a Jaws pinball game.
Yep.
But
my point is, I wouldn't set foot past maybe like the 2-yard mark of Time Out. So if there was a game within that 2-yard stretch, I'd play the shit out of it. But if anything more than that, you wouldn't catch me too far deep in that. And it's crazy too, because I grew up. I want to just relate my first memory of an arcade game was probably my cousins who lived in Ronkonkoma, Long Island.
Ronkonkoma,
which is a name that's just, if you're not from there, again, it sounds exotic and foreign and just really
exotic.
It sounds like, you know, something like, you know, there would, some sea pirates would be hanging out like in a shanty in Ronkonkoma.
Sea pirates.
Or Native American sea pirates.
Sea pirates.
But I remember being over their house and they were like, oh, we got to go to this pizza place. There's a game there that you've got to check out. It's called Space Invaders. And I don't know how old I was.
Yes.
I mean, Space Invaders came out, I think, in 78. It was probably after that. So it might have been like 79. So I was like 7 years old. And my cousins were all older. I looked up to them. I'm like, oh, if these guys think this is great, this is awesome. And we're going to a pizza place. And I just remember them saying, like, do you have any quarters? And at the time I'm thinking, I'm like, yeah, I got some quarters. Am I going to be able to get like a couple of slices of pizza? And like, oh, no, give us your quarters. Watch what happens. And what happened was is that they used my quarters to play Space Invaders for the next hour. And I think I got to play one time. But that was, you know, that was growing up with older cousins for you. But that was my first memory, was being in this Ronkonkoma pizza place. They had one stand up Space Invaders game and I was completely enthralled. I didn't know what the hell I was looking at, but I'm like, this thing looks incredible. These graphics are just state of the art, amazing. You know, it's got a good beat, a good, you know,
I'm in the top five in the world in Space Invaders impersonations. Wow. Behind, I think the four people in front of me is that guy from Police Academy.
Yeah, Michael Winslow.
Yeah, he holds the four positions, and then there's me. And the one that I do is the and that, I mean, you can't. I know people will try to, you know, copy that, but there's no way.
You can't see this, but my finger actually started twitching like I was hitting the fire button when you were doing that. It was just, it's like muscle memory. It was crazy. Crazy. Yeah. Anyway.
There were people who've like screamed, you know, UFO and aliens are coming when I've made that sound.
Wow. You're like a modern day Orson Welles.
Yeah. So, oh, wait. One thing I wanted to add about time. See, that's, I love that idea. You kind of hit the nail on the head, though. Even though it was family, they still stole your money, and that was family. So keep in mind, you're going into this timeout arcade environment, and I'm pretty sure I remember like smoke billowing out the front of the arcade into the mall, kind of like fog rolling off a swamp. You know what I mean? So like that's what was greeting you before you even walked into the place. And I love that you talked about this line that was there as far as you wouldn't play any games beyond that line. These video arcades were pretty narrow. Most of them were not very large or very wide. So it was hard to see all the way back and around everything. And they were dark. The lights were turned down, if not off, in a lot of them. So you can get a very good view of of the screen you were playing. And I would do just this general like stop, like in my tracks. Like I would take a couple steps, just like you said. You said you'd go off and play a game toward the front. Like I would like go to walk in, and I was a big fan of pinball, and they a lot of times would put the pinball in the back of these arcades.
Smart.
So I would do the like I'd walk a couple steps and I would freeze like I was walking the fire swamps in The Princess Bride. You know what I mean? Like I just froze, waiting for something to come and strike me down. And then I might continue on and then try to like keep a low profile and hide in the back by the pinball machines, which maybe pinball for me became a way, you know, a vehicle of self-preservation, not just something that I enjoyed. I don't know. Stay away from the games where the quarters were piling up. So.
And I feel like a place like Time Out has built up this mythical quality over the years, because obviously I'm sure people weren't getting I'm reasonably sure that people weren't getting murdered in the back dark corners of that place.
Maybe.
But
there's a good maybe.
Yeah, it's a solid.
It's a solid maybe.
If you pushed me, I'd give it a, you know, a 48 to 49%. So, but.
Pretty sure it didn't happen 49% of the time.
But I think it just added to this whole mystique. You know, you didn't know. I honestly couldn't tell you what games were back there, other than I knew I somehow knew that the pinball machines were back there, because I think, you know, they the people that own these places knew that pinball was kind of on its way out. So if you wanted to play pinball, you'd have to venture in there, and on your way, maybe you'd see, holy shit, is that a Galaga game? I got to play me some of that.
Yeah.
So it would be the way to like draw you in. Like, if you want to play pinball, you're going to have to pass some of these new machines that are pretty rad. And you're also probably going to have to maneuver through a couple of knife fights.
Well, yeah, exactly. The pinball machines, now that I'm thinking about it, makes sense, because they're very long. they would take up a lot of space. So you wouldn't want to put those babies up front, because then you're having to maneuver around, you know, a longer pinball machine, then cut back in to the...
Oh, looks like someone's getting a little upset about the topic here. I think maybe...
I say we leave it in. All right, so I think the pinball machines were set back there probably because their profile, they're just so long. So you would be in the way if the pinball machine was up front. But you're right, they were also on their way out. But, you know, I want to talk a little bit about the different senses. We'll go through the five senses because there is some taste involved. But I want to go through the five senses of walking into a video arcade in the 80s. And it really doesn't matter whether it's Time Out at Smith Haven Mall, something in New Jersey, something in Dallas, Texas. It probably had a very similar feel in a lot of ways. So, you know, let's go through the senses real quick. What did you hear when you walked in?
Well, for the census, I'd like to say that I am a resident of
we can start over. The five senses. Well, we'll go into what did you hear? What was, cuz I think you would see things when you walked in, but the first thing that would hit you was like a wave of sound. Am I right in a way?
Well, it was just this cacophony of bleeps and electronic noises of all. You had all these video games that are trying to entice you with the glowing lights. So I'm going into sight, but this also comes into the sound.
That's it.
And it was, okay, what bizarre alien bleeps and beeps is going to entice me on top of the crazy lights and graphics that are, and also, I mean, you know, there maybe not fine art, but there was some semblance of art to designing the side of these arcade games. You know, that
I was thinking the same thing
too. Like you'd see something, and it was obviously usually more fantastical than what could actually be rendered on screen. But I'm thinking of something like Defender or Missile Command. They had like, you know, they had these epic little vignettes on the side of the arcade game that when you get up there with your quarter and if someone was playing, you know, you'd have to do the whole, you know, the arcade etiquette of placing your quarter up onto the dashboard. Like I got next.
That's why I played pinball, I think, right there. The I got next. So, all right. So you had the sights, the sights, definitely. I love the side art. Pac-Man had great side art and just some really bright, vibrant colors on some of the machines, and they spaced them out a little bit so you could see some of the art on the side. Mm-hmm. And then touch, the feel, we'll get into the touch of the machines of playing a little bit in a moment, but maybe because I was such a wimpus that that's one of the reasons I played pinball, because there was this whole strange social thing that had to occur. And I was shy. You got to know something about Pete and I. We were the shyest people of the late 70s, early 80s. You will not find anyone else more shy than us. But so one interaction in a day, a new interaction, unplanned, was enough. But you go into an arcade, you're going to have an interaction with the attendant because you probably don't have enough quarters. You may have some dollar bills with you if you're so lucky. So you're going to have to change those out. That's one interaction. Another interaction is the guy, the 32-year-old guy with dirty jeans, with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, who's playing Asteroids. And you want in, but you look up there and he's got about five more quarters stacked. And your play is to take your little three stack of quarters and place it next to his five. But you have to come precariously close to his body to do that. Fear of being burnt by the cigarette, fear that the guy is just going to turn around and headbutt me. I mean, I would never even say I got next. Would you actually say that out loud, Pete?
Well, side note, not only was that guy playing Asteroids, he was also suffering from Asteroids. So he was a little bit ornery. And
no, that's the H one.
Oh.
Yeah, if you're suffering from Asteroids, it's still Asteroids.
Ah, see, I always thought the commercial was preparation A for Asteroids.
No, because Asteroids, if you're suffering from Asteroids, it's still Asteroids. Like Han Solo suffered from Asteroids.
Yes. Never tell him the odds.
No. So, I didn't want to reach around the guy. I don't want to get within 1 or 2 inches of this 32-year-old. I was like 11, 12. I mean, come on.
I would always try to stealthily just place my quarter up there. And, you know, sometimes those displays were glass. So, like, if you put the quarter on there, you'd hear that little, like, click. So, like, you knew that it was there. And I would try to do it silently, which really never helped me, because if some kid that was 4 years older than me didn't hear the quarter up there, they would just plunk in another one. And I would just sit there patiently waiting for him to get tired of the game. And then I would, you know, get all excited, right, be like, now's my chance. Here I go. I'm going to play me some Tempest. And then, you know, someone else would come walking up and shove me out of the way. Yeah. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'll go over and check out Donkey Kong.
Yeah. Well, here's not until Mortal Kombat. And I'm not knocking people of all different ages. See, we're all in the same gamer world. But I want to tell people who played Mortal Kombat, where they were stacking quarters like up to the ceiling. It was like a fucking Jenga game. You did not – like, it all started – with Donkey Kong, Pac-Man, and the stack of quarters there. And then it disappeared. And then it came back with Mortal Kombat. But
that was getting further along. That was kind of – I mean, arcades were still kind of going, but they were definitely on the downswing at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the early 80s was – it was like a crazy time. There were, like, movies made just about arcades. Like the one about the guy – I think it was Emilio Estevez was in it. He gets sucked into the arcade game to try and get to, like, the final level, which was, like, you know, when you're a kid watching, you're like, oh, this is the most awesome movie ever made. This guy, like, breaks into an arcade to play any game he wants, but then he gets sucked actually into a game. Of course, I think he ends up permanently part of the game, which...
Pre-Tron, right?
Pre-Tron. Yeah, that was, definitely pre-Tron. Yeah.
Emilio Estevez is Tron's bitch. No, Tron is Emilio Estevez's bitch, right? Did I say that right?
It makes you look at the Mighty Ducks in a whole new light.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Pete, tell me a little bit about – because you were certain back in the day to have an interaction with the arcade attendant, if you will. I would have that interaction with the arcade attendant because I played pinball, and the ball would get stuck at times and you'd have to call the attendant over to – I don't know. Would they shake them? I couldn't even know. I could have done it myself.
Yeah, there was always the risk that a game was going to eat your quarter, and you'd have to complain and, hey, game ate my quarter, and they would come over and look at it, and they'd press the coin return slot five or six times, which was always, like, glowing red, that plastic button, and then they'd have to open up he would have, like, the key ring with about, like, 97 keys on it for each game in the arcade, so he'd have to get the right key out and open up a little panel. Man. Right underneath, and, you know, would usually eject a quarter and hand it back to be like, here you go. And this was usually like some 18-year-old kid that was like his, you know, just a whatever part-time job to.
When he swung that baby open, it had the same feeling to me as like looking behind, like, you know, the curtain where the wizard from The Wizard of Oz was hanging out. It was like in that one moment in your life when some dude worked the soda vending machine. And he, like, had the key to pop it open and gave you a soda from the inside of the machine. I mean, that's special. You know what I mean? Like, when you got to see the inside of the machine. But, yeah, it seemed like one out of six times you put a quarter in, you didn't hear it clunk down because there was a nice, smooth per-clunk. When your quarter went in and went where it was supposed to, you knew it.
It was...
And when you didn't hear that clunk, you heard the purr. With no clunk.
Yep, and that just reminded me of the, you know, when a game was kind of busted and you would put the quarter in, it would go right through and go right back to the coin return and wasn't accepting the quarter. That was always just a really, I'd go home. It would be tough to get me off the couch for the rest of the day. I'd be really, really down from that.
Yeah, and do you call the attendant at that point, or do you just like,
I would just,
you
know,
you and I being shy.
Yeah, I'd just move on.
You and I, being super shy, you just pop the quarter out and pretend like it never happened. Like, I just lost a minute of my life, and I'm not going to tell anyone. Yeah. It's okay.
So,
but
all right. So,
what about when the attendant does come, when you got your dollar bill? And you don't have your...
Oh, well, if he's got the change belt, then it's usually a pretty quick transaction.
Change belt? What are you talking about?
You know the change belt. Everyone knows the change belt. You just, you know, depress the little lever. You got the tubes up for quarters, nickels, dimes, pennies. And this was before change machines really caught on, although there probably were change machines back then too. But
Late 70s, I don't think so. I
yeah,
think
maybe
it was
not in the late
early
70s.
80s. Yeah.
And if you want a really good interpretation of this, hop on Netflix.
Oh, no.
And yeah, you know where I'm
going.
Don't
tell anyone.
You know where I'm going. You pull up an episode of the Incredible Hulk TV series with Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno. There's an episode where David Banner takes a job basically slinging change at an arcade in New York. And totally of the time, it is, by equal measures, an incredible yet incredibly hysterical episode. And you do yourself a favor and please watch it, because the entire episode revolves around a fucking arcade. And him
New York City, baby,
with a bag of change and getting mugged and hulking out. And then I think he busts up a couple of arcades at the arcade game. But it's really amazing. We may do a special episode on that at some point down the road.
I'm holding my hand right now in this very Spock-ish. Everybody knows what Spock did with, you know, with his little hand maneuver.
Yeah, he invented penicillin.
No, Spock. Spock, Star Trek Spock. Yeah, so I'm holding my hand right now with like my middle finger and my ring finger separated, and my middle and pointer are attached, and my ring and my pinky are attached. And then my thumb, though, is precariously spread far away, because the guy on the change
belt. You're giving the okay sign?
No. The guy on the change belt, his thumb, like he went way out of his way to separate the thumb. Like his thumb was on another hand. It was so far away, because that thing was going to jam on some weird lever. And just every time he jammed that thing, four quarters came out. I thought when I was younger, he hit it so many times that like one quarter came out every time. I think four quarters came out, although I don't know anyone who did the job, and I don't own such said change belt.
And you know, I mean, you needed opposable thumbs to work that job, so...
Mm-hmm.
No orangutans, no chimps, no gorillas.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Humans only dispensing change at the timeout arcade.
So the guy would like slam, like it was an act of like art and dominance at the same time. See, he would slam on this metal change belt on the side of his pants, and out come the quarters, always the perfect amount. I don't know how he did it. He would hand them to you. You hand him his bills and you're off, right? Now you feel like you just... It's almost like somebody gave you $1,000 and said, go run around the supermarket or the mall or Toys R Us or whatever, Child World back in the day, right? It could have been just five quarters, four quarters, and you felt like you had the key to, like, you know, the most amazing city that you've ever seen in your life.
My parents, one summer we went, and this is going to sound a little more risque than it's intended to, and people that know will know. But one summer, my parents took us with another family to the Playboy Club in upstate New York. Now, this was a thing that existed.
Yeah, I know.
It was very family friendly, except like there was like the lounge where the kids really wouldn't hang out. But they had, you know, a giant arcade. And I just remember my parents giving me and my brother just like a bag full of quarters and be like,
whoa,
go nuts. And we would literally spend the entire day in the arcade. And I think I saw that and the pool. And that's all I remember of the Playboy Club.
Oh, my God. Similarly, my parents gave me the same gift many times, but it was just the bag.
Oh.
So it didn't have the – like I think I got a bag one time without any quarters.
I think that was
so same feel.
Yeah, but I think that was to kind of motivate you to be like, here's the bag. Now go fill it with quarters.
Exactly. One shout out for my dad, because I want to throw in real quick. We're going to get in a minute again to some of these like outside mini arcades. My dad, the Beefsteak Charlie's thing with me was going to a New York Knicks game at Madison Square Garden once a year. My dad worked in New York City. He didn't want to go back that often because he worked there. But we go to Beefsteak Charlie's before a Knicks game and get the peony shrimp. And, you know, that was probably the time I did not play a game, because it's just he and I. So props to my pops just introducing me to Beefsteak Charlie's. But I think back on Long Island, I may have played like a half a game. And I want to talk a little bit about what happened when you walked up to a game and you didn't have a quarter. Because that freaking happened in my life many times.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think as we start to transition, like, you know, yeah, the arcades kind of popped up in different places in the late 70s, early 80s, but then, you know, as same as with the pizza place where I first saw Space
Oh,
Invaders,
yeah.
you had these other places that were like, oh, this is an easy moneymaker. So they'd start popping up in different
I'm
places that you
sorry.
can.
I'm sorry. I did it again. I'm just so good at it. All right, continue.
Oh, yeah. Pop, hops on pops, pops on
Yeah.
pops, props to pops. On pops, hops.
So in the pizza place.
Well, now not in the pizza place because I'm not hungry anymore. But
Oh, no. You were talking a story about a pizza place that Space Invaders for the first time.
yeah, well, you just started to see these other places pop up where our, you know, where arcade or video games would be at. So they'd be, maybe there would just be one, maybe there'd be two. Then you had a place like Studio 25, which was a roller rink. It was kind of like Studio 54.
I
But
got a story.
more roller skating, less cocaine, and topless women.
I got a story that I've never told you, but hit the,
Okay.
you know, because we're definitely going to do a roller skating podcast.
Oh yeah, for
I
sure.
mean, in and of
For sure.
itself. But
But
yeah,
Studio 25
actually.
was like an amazing place. And I think the transition was
Yeah.
is that it was not as intimidating as a place like Time Out.
Yeah.
There was,
Yeah. And.
and I'm trying to remember, like you would skate into the place and there would be on the right would be the roller rink, and which
Yes.
pretty large. And then if you got to the back, there was a snack bar. And then along the left-hand wall near the bathrooms was just a row of, I don't know, there was maybe like 10 to 12 video games.
Well, here's what happened. They had a there was a little bit of like a handheld like I don't know, some kind of railing because everybody would freaking fall on their asses, but it was a little bit of ramp down. And as you got off the roller rink and went across the carpet, there's a little ramp down onto this like little tile, like real tiny tile. So you get the going, you know, as you went across the tile. But before you got into the bathroom where that slick tile was, there was to the left and to the right, like a long row of games. They had quite a few.
Yeah, they had a
They had
lot. The
quite a few
ones that I
games there.
remember, they had Tempest, they had Donkey Kong. Those are the two
Shoot,
that I
Tempest, you're
played.
right. They did it. Tempest was an odd one because when you're talking the tactile feel of games,
It
there
had the
are some
knob.
weird things that people, yeah. I mean, and people know with the Atari, but if you go even back further, it was way cooler because the feel of some of these games was absolutely original, one of a kind. Talk about Tempest a little bit. It's freaking crazy.
Well, I think it was one of the first like vector looking games. It was, you know, there were like
Good luck
these,
describing
yeah,
this.
there's no way to really describe it.
Just
It was
Google
almost
it,
like a
please.
vortex, and you had
Oh,
a
nice.
piece that was kind of hover around the fringe of it, but it wasn't
Okay.
like a circle. It had like jagged edges, and things would come out of the vortex, and you'd have to be in line in that groove to like shoot it, I think. Maybe. I don't even
Flip
know.
back. This is why Pete edited my book. There's no way in hell that I would describe this game because I'd be like, there was some blips and you had a knobby thing.
Well, that was like the cool thing. It had like a knob, almost kind of like a dial that you would, you know, change the radio, and it had like buttons. But as opposed to most of the games, which had the joystick and button combo, or if you were playing something like Centipede, you get like the trackball, which again was like very exotic and was blowing everyone's minds to be like, oh man, you I could just roll this ball around and the thing moves. That's crazy.
Yeah, it went every direction. That was like
But I
freakish to
just want
me.
to, for a moment, I just want to applaud the manager, whoever it was working at Studio 25,
Oh, God.
that saw the need and met the need of those who wanted to play Donkey Kong on roller skates. Because, you know, hats off, they definitely did it. I mean, it was kind of comical. You know, the roller rink would have like different things. They'd have numbers on the walls, be like, oh, when the music, they'd do almost like a musical chairs. Like you'd have to stop at a number, and if you were at a certain number, you'd have to get kicked off. And then they'd do. But let me tell you, once they announced couple skate, straight to the video game. That's where I was. You know,
Yep,
once they said
me
couple skate,
too.
I couldn't get off the floor fast enough. I was shooting ducks. I was shooting little kids. I was running over grandmothers. Just get me to the video game, because couple
Tune
skate is not where I want to be.
Tune into our next podcast, The Shy Guys. When the couple skate came up, the Shy Guys skated like faster than they ever had before, down to the video game area, grabbing their slush puppy and their hot dog, and just, you know, getting it going.
The sweats, I mean, that would come over me when I'd hear a couple skate, yeah. I'd be like, oh no, I got to get out of here. Because I was just on there, like, pretending that I was playing, like, hockey, skating, and I would, like, literally skate into the wall because I thought it was fun. Like, oh, look at me, I'm just going to throw a check against the brick wall and then fall over. That was a good time for me. Couple skate was like the most nerve-wracking thing that you could possibly mention to me.
Oh, definitely. There's an important thing to talk about, and I know most video gamers know this, but like a lot of gamers talk about cutscenes in games, mostly home games, you know, PS2, 3, 4, Xbox, 360, Xbox One, whatever. They all have cutscenes. But in the original arcade games, they had scenes to entice you to play. So rather than just a blank screen when you walked up to the game, there was a portion of the game that was showing that would take you through maybe half a level. And it was usually some epic fail that, like, you know, Mario did in Donkey Kong or somebody did at showing you what not to do. And then it would flip over to, like, high scores and different things like that. And it would entice you visually, and it would give you the sound, too. And you know, those would be going on at some of these areas where people that were less populated, like some of the stores where people were not playing as many games. So they would try to get the kids over. So, Pete, there was a store on Long Island called Rickles. You remember the store?
Do I remember it? God.
I'm talking about this today because in therapy, my therapist thought it would be a really good idea to talk about Rickles. So it's just coming up. You know, it's mandatory. It's not really for entertainment purposes. But Rickles was the modern, the early day Lowe's or Home Depot. But it was just drab. It was like, here's your lighting section and here's a bunch of wires. And I just, as a little kid, could you pick something less interesting? Nowadays, you go into those stores and they have books and games. They're smart.
Rickles was basically hell and purgatory rolled into one for a kid. There's no question about it. When my parents announced that we were going to Rickles, I did anything in my power to throw up in the back of the station wagon because it was disgusting.
I think I cried. Pete, I think I cried to the best because I keep a log on this stuff. Three times on accident, three times on purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever
each trip, right?
Yeah, and it would never get me out of going to Rickles for some reason. That was the place you had to go. So you go to Rickles. There were two games that I can remember. There was Donkey Kong, without a doubt. That was really my intro to Donkey Kong because I was so shy. I didn't want to go play it in front of a lot of people. So I would watch it at Rickles and try to get a little, you know, some pointers and tips from this terrible intro screen. And then, but I really got addicted to the music. on it. And then I don't know if it was Q-Bert or Dig. I can't remember what the other game was. It wasn't important because Donkey Kong was there. But on average, if I went to Rickles 20 times with my parents, forget average. I'm going totals here. Okay. I went to Rickles 20 times with my parents. I netted, grossed 50 cents. I think that's how many two quarters I got out of the 20 times that I went to Rickles. I played Donkey Kong probably once or twice, you know, in one session, and the rest I had to stand there. And when that opening screen was going through, it was so embarrassing standing there without money to play that I had to pretend like I was the one playing. Who bought that, really? Who believed that?
Parents are – they could just be really cruel sometimes, and I –
back then.
I really think that my parents like went out of their way to kind of just fuck with me and my brother when it was like time to go to Rickles. Because the easy thing to do would be like, here's a couple of quarters, we'll be 20 minutes.
$2! $2!
Yeah, you can each play two games. Because I could honestly not tell you, I never set foot more than 5 feet in Rickles because the video game was right at the entrance and I would not go past that because...
Yep.
For a kid, there was absolutely nothing in there that even people that were as imaginative as us could not do anything with that store. There was nothing there that could remotely entertain or interest us other than the video game. Yeah. And my parents, for whatever reason, whenever they went to Rickles, never had any quarters. So it was just me and my brother standing up there looking at the game, like, oh, that would be great to play. Granted, it probably would have lasted about 30 seconds because for all this talk of video games, when I look back on it, I really kind of sucked at almost all of them. There was like no video game that I would point to and be like, oh, you remember that game?
Hey guys, watch me play this game.
Yeah. I can say in all honesty that there was no video game that I was even good at. I was average at a few. I was really terrible at a lot of others, but I was not good at any of them. But
I was good at pinball because it was a bunch of flippers and like real physics, even though you're set to lose. Video games, the majority of games you are set to play for a minute or less in the 80s because they want you to get into it and then they want the next person to throw their quarter in.
And this was before, you'd have those games that came along where if you died, if you put in another quarter, you could continue, and those shooter games and like those early like X-Men side-scrolling games.
Continuing anything.
Yeah, no, you got three lives in Pac-Man, if you weren't good enough to get some extra lives. And then you were done. And usually that
started over from the beginning. Yep. None of this, pansy games nowadays, which I love, by the way. So I'm just kind of joking, but where you're like, every step of the way, I'm going to save. And like, so if you die, you go back to your save.
And that's a good point because I think that added a level. I mean, that added a ton of replay value, certainly in the early days when there weren't a ton of new video games and the graphics were still pretty basic. It was this, it became a badge of honor if you could, defeat the game or turn the game over, I think was, I remember that was a term used playing Asteroids on the Atari 2600. I think I did that once, but, in the arcade, forget about it. But, it was my dream was to either find an arcade game that not anyone played so that I could make the top 10 on Defender. And then, when you could scroll, you had like the three letters for your initials. All I wanted to do was just type in ASS, ass, that was like, it was either that or ace,
How slow would you go through? Like if it was, so people could see that you were entering. The only time I ever got to enter my initials was at Rickles because I'm pretty sure every day, every night they unplugged the machine and then the next day they plugged it in and erased the high scores. Mm-hmm. So like I would be the high score cause I was the only poor bastard like playing the game at a freaking, home do it yourself.
The only one that I remember really lasting a while was they had Defender and I think Ms. Pac-Man at the Smithtown Bowl, again, right by the entrance. And that was one, when it wasn't your turn to bowl, you could maybe get a game in because, your turn would come every 5 minutes. So you could probably play like a good 10 or 12 games and, in that span because I wasn't making it past like the third level of Ms. Pac-Man ever. My brain was just not wired to pick up those patterns that, people could do. And then, solve the game because it was all about knowing where the ghosts are going to go and when they're going to be.
Right.
That my brain has never and will never, don't even mention it. Never mention it to me ever again.
The buttons on machines, tactically again, like you were talking about Tempest before, which was like a marvel of a game because it had that turning knob. But like, all right, you had the trackball that was, what was the trackball used for? I'm trying to remember.
Centipede for sure.
Centipede. That was it.
Missile Command?
Centipede was like Space Invaders, but you were able to maneuver your shooter underneath from the left all the way to the right and even up and down a little bit to shoot apart parts of the Centipede. What was the other one you said?
Missile Command.
Again, like a ball that you could roll in any direction. Amazing. To me, the tactile feel of the round joystick, it was always a little small in the hand, compared to like Pete and I played baseball. It's nothing compared to that. So it was interesting. You had like dominant feel of it. And then you had the smooth buttons. Like all the buttons were like these like plasticky smooth material. They were just great. And then I'm trying to think, Pete, were there any other tactile things that I'm missing? I mean,
oh, I'm sure.
You get, later on, you get into those sitting-in games, like where they turn Star Wars into a – you're going to sit down in the game and hold on to a, you know, a control – a control joystick with two hands kind of thing. But early on, I mean, you had the track and field games where you had to smack the two buttons as fast as you could, left and right. I can't think really of anything else that was different than the trackball, the joystick, and maybe some buttons. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, those were the main ones. I'm trying to I'm drawing a blank, too. On some of those other ones. I know that they're out there, but those are like the popular ones.
People could message us, you know, if they think of anything else, like in the early arcade that we're missing there, because there were definitely, I'm sure there were some other things out there.
Oh, for sure.
You had the guns. You had guns.
Yeah, I mean, those were like a little later, from like the 60s and 70s, those like light guns. I remember my dad taking me to, I can't remember, it was somewhere in Center Reach. I want to say it was near like Plaza Sports in Center Reach. Again, this is going completely foreign to anyone that's not from Long Island.
Houses. But,
there was like some kind of arcade. I don't know if it was an arcade. It was. They had some arcade games, but they had like some of those old school games where it was like a Wild West thing. And it was an actual film. Like the guy, the bandit would walk out into frame. And then you had the gun would be holstered. And then when like a light would blink, you had to draw the gun and shoot him, which was just like a light gun. Like it would just like project a piece of light on him. And if you did it fast enough, you'd kill him. If not, then you'd be shot. And I was horrible at that game too. I don't think I've ever killed any of the bandits. But that was like an old school before video games came along. And they had a bunch of those definitely in the mid to late 70s before – you know, the Pac-Mans and Defenders and those type games came on and took over the whole scene. So, but
amazing sounds. Pete, when you think back to the day of a game or two that threw sounds at you, that you were like, that is awesome. Defender is one of them to me. When you'd blow up some things, but then when you'd do that special thing, there was like a special thing where you could like hyperspace and disappear, or you'd go down below.
Yep.
And then you could hit a special button and blow up everything on the screen. It had an awesome sound for the day. Now that I just, excuse me, that was a sneeze.
That was the Defender Slash reaching into a bag of potato chips sound.
Yeah. It was just like, I'm not even going to try it because I can't.
Yeah, I know exactly. I'm not going to do it now either because they're just going to embarrass myself.
Something like that. And that could have been the sound or my toilet flushing. So just in case anyone's like
you're hocking a loogie. That
could have been my toilet flushing.
Doing your loogie hocking on air.
That was a great sound. Space Invaders of that, you know, that slow, I'm going to kick your ass, slowly approaching you.
And then as you shot the aliens, it would pick up, and then that obviously made you a little more tense because all of a sudden it was, you know, these things are speeding up and like
they would you like miss them a few times, and in the Galgan Galaxian they would do it too where they would like flutter quicker.
Yep.
You sucked, you know, like me. Or Donkey Kong had a great lead-in song and then like great sounds as you went through the game, you know, as you were hitting barrels or jumping over barrels. It was awesome. Pac-Man had a great sound to it. Everything was so original.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, while we're starting to talk about specific games, that's a good segue. Let's talk about some of your favorite games growing up that you played.
Okay. Donkey Kong was definitely one of my favorites to watch and play. That was the whole Rickles thing where I just wanted to be good at it. But I probably, you know, over a 4-year period, 25 cents per game, I probably spent like a good $1.25 on practicing the game. So I didn't get good at it. But that game I loved. And there's a game which now I've gotten for the MAME console. If anybody knows about the MAME simulator, it's just the best thing for the computer. But Elevator Action, part of it was because nobody else played it. So that's my go-to, like, hey, I'll step up here because there was nobody there. You know, no stacking quarters. Elevator Action was this spy game where there was like different floors, like 100 floors in each level, and you go down, 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 whether it be through elevator or escalator, and there would be a red door on a certain level, and you'd go in and grab the the private plans, and the only controls were jumping and shooting. And when you jumped, you did this kick. So if you jumped before the other guy did, you kicked him in the face, or you could shoot him, or you can actually on the joystick, you could pull down or jump up. That was it. And I love this game mostly because I got to the second level. Like, if you got to a second level in a game, you're like, this is awesome. I got to the second level. What about you, Pete?
I would say, and I want to say that I didn't come into my own with video games until probably when I was playing on the Commodore 64. And that's, again, that's a topic for another time. But yeah. My favorite video game, I think, of all time had to be that Star Wars vector game where you do the run on the Death Star.
That game is special, and it was like, I sucked at it.
Yeah, I couldn't make it past. I got people? The first level I could do.
You want to describe it for a few people that never played that? Because that is an oldie.
Yeah, this along the lines of Tempest was like one of those first vector games, and basically you're piloting an X-Wing. I think you're basically Luke Skywalker. It had some synthesized voices from the movie, which was awesome. So, you know, Ben Kenobi, while you're in the trench, was like, use the Force, and Darth Vader would be like, the Force is strong with this one. And it started out that you would be flying in space, you could see the Death Star, and then you'd have to defend from these TIE fighter attacks, and they would shoot fireballs at you, and you could shoot the fireballs, and you had a certain, I think, 6 level of shield, so once you got hit 6 times, you were then defenseless, and if you got hit again, you blew up. And so that would happen for a little bit. Darth Vader's TIE fighter would be flying around, so you get extra points for hitting that. And then after a certain amount of time, it would automatically zoom you into the trench of the Death Star. And then you'd have to go in, and then you'd have like...
Explain the feeling, Pete. Explain the first time you saw or played that game when it brought you into the trench of the Death
it's
Star.
It's like climbing the rope in gym. You know, you get that special feeling down below.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No, like you could describe it like a video game and like an excitement thing.
Well, it was certainly for the time, it was the closest that you were going to experience the movie. And, you know, we were all pretty obsessed with Star Wars back then. So the fact that it looked kind of 3D, it was it seemed like it was like the next wave of computer graphics that was coming along. Like, this is awesome. So once you would swoop into the trench, it was like, oh, my God, this is crazy. And so you'd have to avoid the fireballs coming at you. And then when you got to the end, you had to aim it just right to hit the exhaust port to blow up the Death Star. And
it almost always did, though. It was weird. It's like they set this game up so you'd blow up the Death Star, and then you'd go to the next level, which was basically just a bunch of pillars with very tiny rectangles on top that you had to shoot, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it.
That's usually where I lost it, because then
I'd start sweating.
If you made it past that, you go into the trench again, but now the trench had barriers, so you'd have to like fly up above and below them. And I think I maybe got past that second level one time. But
I love Zaxxon.
Zaxxon
is another like 3D game that it was that same feel. It's like you're playing it and you're like, this is 3D, and at the same time you're like, I can't understand what I'm doing. But like that's what it was, like the Star Wars game. Pete, did you ever play the Star Wars game where you'd get in and sit down and grab a handle? Because I had one like that.
Yeah, that was basically the same game, but I think that was the next iteration of it. Was they kind of made it look like, you know, it was like you were actually in the cockpit as opposed to standing there. So, but I think it was essentially the same game. But I could be wrong. I don't know.
Yeah. So, I mean, Pete, when you're talking about the arcade, because, you know, we could talk about Rickles. Some of those situations, Rickles was a very sad situation for me. it's not an environment that I really want to discuss and go back, you know, too much to talk about. It shaped my life, who I am, and it really, I think a lot of the faults and the shortcomings of my life can be blamed on Rickles.
Don Rickles?
I mean, like, if the president CEO of Rickles is still alive and or listening to this podcast, I just want to let you know, you kind of ruined my life because you set my potential. You brought it way down. But the arcade, you know, the feeling of the arcade, like, you know, with that puff of smoke, you knew your parents didn't want you going in there as soon as you saw that cloud coming out. But yet you did anyway. I mean, what did it feel like? Was it a bad thing? Was it so bad? It's like, how could you characterize the actual feel of an enclosed arcade?
Well, I mean, I think it goes back, as you know, we kind of come full circle here as we move to wrap up this episode. I mean, it was like a danger to it, but it was an excitement. It was like another world. And again, it's hard to describe, especially for younger people that might be listening. Don't want to be all like, you know, back in my day and get off my lawn. But we've never really seen anything like that before. And it was like this amazing new technology. And
you had to do it.
You had to do it. And you had like the older kids were obviously well on board and we're all about it. And we were kind of, again, because we were so shy, it was like we were intrigued by it. And so you just had like this, it was kind of, you know, in a way, walking into Time Out was almost like walking into the Star Wars cantina for the first time. There's array of different people, smells, sights, sounds. It was overwhelming. And that's probably why I never made it that far in, because it was like a little too overwhelming for me at the time. I kind of wish I could go back now, because I think I probably would have had an even better experience. But that said, I mean, it holds a very dear place in my youth, in my heart, in my mind of growing up. I love everything about the whole, you know, coming of age while all this stuff was happening and progressing around us. So it was pretty amazing. And, you know, whether it was a full-blown arcade like Time Out, or if it was just going to a random place, I won't use the word Rickles, although I just did, so
damn
son
it.
Of a bitch. But a place like that,
I gotta change my clothes.
Or a department store, you might want to burn them too.
Damn it. Uh-huh. Yeah.
But then you could probably go and buy some materials at Rickles to make your own pair of pants after that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there was just something about it. It was the danger. Like, you know, my parents certainly back then were a little more progressive and open-minded. But there was definitely the danger element, too, of the parents like, oh, is this going to rot my kid's brain? So it was like, well, you can do some of this, but you still need to go out and play softball or soccer or do this with your friends. So there was that balance there. And, you know, I think probably our parents are probably figuring it out like we were, too. Like, I don't think anyone really had a handle on how big video games would become. I mean, arcade kind of came and went. I think by the late 80s, it was pretty much done. So it was a brief run, but video games themselves clearly are a dominant medium
bigger
now.
Than ever.
More popular than ever. Just, I mean, the sales alone for video games that get released now, especially the good ones are incredible. And you know, it's come so far, the things that you can do in a video game. And, you know, the complaints that you might have about a game now, you know, are kind of silly when you look at games back then. But obviously it's apples and oranges, different time and all that. And I'm definitely rambling right now. But
no, that's OK. Well, I mean, the guy, that creepy guy, one of the things I said, I'll say and leave you guys with before, I just want to do a little postscript here, is compare anything now to where a 12-year-old would go and hang out around a 25, 26, 27-year-old. There is no such thing. And that's what we were doing back then. We were a little more free. It was a little bit more carefree to go and let your kids go in the mall and do their thing and then come back and meet you at a time. I didn't even have the cell phones. You just had a watch. Parent told you at this time you come back, and you did. But so you can't compare anything to that. It's unbelievable. But one last thing I want to throw out there, and maybe we'll hit some of this in another podcast, is one of the ultimate video game experiences of the early 80s, if your parents told you you were going to get to stay at a hotel on vacation. There was a vending area. Maybe there was a pool. There was always a video game area. And it was like a little square of like 6, 7, 8 games. And you just stood there the whole night, whether you had quarters or not. Am I correct, Pete?
102% correct. And yeah. And
nothing special. Nothing really additional to say because there was no attendant at those. You're on your own, and probably half the time the machine took your quarter just because.
Yeah, and then there was no getting those quarters back. And you know, you'd get a mix and match of different types of games. But the thing I liked about places like that, like going on vacation and playing those games at the hotel, was you would kind of be forced to play a game that you might not normally play because they didn't have anything else, or you know, or Pac-Man or Ms. Pac-Man or whatever was out of order or something. So you were forced to play another one, and maybe you liked it, maybe you didn't, but it really didn't matter. It was just the sensation of being there with your family and friends and just plunking that quarter in, and the experience of playing that game and how many hours you could kind of kill, even though you would be getting killed really, really easily. It still seemed to take forever. Like you could spend an entire day there.
Right. You felt kind of like at hotels that like your home rules didn't apply, and that you were able to act older than you actually were because you were, you know, left in the hallway for a few minutes to grab ice or play a video game and then told to come back to the room.
Right. And what kid didn't dream of being able to have their own standalone video game, arcade game in their bedroom? I mean, I know I fantasized about that many, many times. Like, wouldn't it be awesome to have the Star Wars game in the corner of my room where you just played, you didn't have to worry about the quarters. You just would hit the button and it would start. And I'm like, that would be the greatest thing ever. I would daydream about that in school, on weekends, in church, wherever. It was just, I'm like, someday I need to make this happen. And it never did, but my fingers were always crossed, hoping that it would.
Look up the show. There was a show called Starcade.
Oh, boy.
Where you played video games to win video games. And I didn't know what to do with myself when the show was on. It scared me a little bit because I wanted a video, like a real arcade game so bad. But look up that.
Right,
look
that, up was, the retroist. That was the prize, right? Like at the end of the, whatever kid won got to.
And nobody ever won the final round ever. I don't think I saw anyone win in the final round. But you got to look up the Retroist podcast. This is a dude that talks about video games and toys and a lot of things that we cover. We're gonna hit him a little bit more on the, like, I can't believe how bad this is, kind of angle. But that's a great podcast. That's where I get a little bit of my information from too. He's just a wealth of information. I was shaped by video arcades. I was damaged by video arcades. And now I have a video game addiction that'll just never go away, ever.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing to have grown up, pretty much all our lives with some semblance of video games, and just to see, again, the progression of where they've come. It's a pretty amazing thing. It was for all we complain about growing up on Long Island, we were right smack in the middle of American suburbia with all that. So we got to experience a lot of that stuff firsthand, and just mostly insane, crazy memories, some of which we've shared with you. And we certainly invite you to share your memories with us, which you can easily do on our Twitter page if you want to follow us at SoBadCast on Twitter. We've been pretty dormant lately, a bunch of things going on, which we won't bother to get into, but we're back now.
But we're back.
And we hope to be a lot more active again And we hope to take you along for the ride. And we want to talk about these things. This is fun for John and I to just sit here and just kind of wax nostalgic about our youth. But we know that a lot of this stuff resonates with you as well. So we want to hear about it. And we want to hear your stories, too, because that's kind of what ties all this stuff together and makes
absolutely
it all.
Absolutely. Contact us, please. And if you do have a time machine, which I hope you do, and you go back to the arcades, you know, do not get burnt by a cigarette. And if you have the chance to play Asteroids, do more than I did. I would hit the rotate button, but I would not hit the advance space thrust button. I would get a little carried away. I hope that you have a little bit more bravery and a little bit more resolve than I did playing Asteroids.
And we hope if you have come down with Asteroids that it clears itself up really.
No, that's the one that Asteroids is the thing. Yeah. Okay. So like you always have it. Yeah.
I thought I had it. Yeah. I thought I had it.
No, everyone has it. Everyone has Asteroids. You can just you can get rid of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
So so it's been very nice spending this evening with you guys. I love all of you, really.
Don't forget, contact is the answer, is the reason that everything happens. Contact.
Woo! Have a good night, everyone.
But, I guess that's it for this week. John, you have anything else to add about AIDS, video games?
The thing that I always love to say is tune in next week or next time. Because people used to say stuff like that back in the day.
We can't wait to come back at you with another amazing episode of Complete Inanity and whatever wants to spill forth from our brains. So until we do that, and until next time, I am Pete, and that is John.
That is me. And Pete, you want to hop on online maybe and play a video game?
Yeah, I think I got a satchel full of quarters, so I'll meet you on there.
Okay, no, you don't have to.
One player, two player.